Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians, all while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. Hey, Mark Holland in for Lynette today, and we have the doctors with us, and they are taking your calls at 800-465-465. They're taking your calls at 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. That's a new number since I was here last for Lynette. But good morning, doctors. They're standing and ready to talk to you.
Good morning, Mark. Good to have you back. Welcome back.
We had some interesting discussions earlier today, and you guys want to kind of recap what we've been talking about with women's health? I'm not sure.
Why not?
Why not?
Well, yeah, we in the first show, we talked probably half an hour in the very beginning about breast cancer.
We did. We didn't get any questions about it, though.
No, nobody called about breast cancer.
No, they called about cancer, but not breast cancer.
No breast cancer, yeah. Prostate cancer.
Yeah.
So we talked about breast cancer, so the men called about prostate cancer. I guess they want to even things out. So should we start this show with prostate cancer?
Let's do it.
And then maybe we'll get women calling in about breast cancer.
That's right.
Who knows?
We had a fair share of women call in, but they didn't ask about breast cancer.
No, they didn't.
Let's talk about prostate cancer then.
Okay. Let's talk about prostate cancer.
Well, first, do you want to tell everybody what you're doing? How are you going to get the information out? And with your new devices and your new equipment, you're recording yourself?
Yes, I am. Actually, this is kind of stage one, but yes. We have a little studio here, but this little studio has corrugated rubber walls on all four and no windows, and it's pretty small. Just room for four people to barely get in here. So I'm going to rebuild the storage room next door into a video studio so that we can actually then video the radio show, and those will then go out as video podcasts.
Nice.
How about that?
Yeah. So
you can actually watch our radio show if you want to. But in the meantime, it had occurred to me that we need a better tool for educating people than just this radio show. Because people can call us in, and we'll talk to one person about their particular problem. But we don't really get a global view of many problems. Mm-hmm. So I have asked my techie staff to make me a new website. I don't know if it's going to be Jerry Mixon MD or JN Mixon MD, but it's going to be one of those. Anyway, Dr. Mixon. And I am starting off with about 30 videos I've started doing. And these are going to be videos on topical subjects. They will be anywhere from 5 to 15 minutes long, depending on how complex they are. And you may need to watch 3 or 4 to get the total view of a subject. Mm-hmm. But we're going to talk about breast cancer and prostate cancer and dementia and, you know, just about every common disease that we get calls about. Mm-hmm. And we're also going to talk about things we do at this clinic. We're going to talk about our weight loss program. We're going to talk so that when the doctor wants to start a patient on a new program, instead of the doctor spending an extra 15 minutes in their hour visit because they already are short of time, they'll be able to have the patient watch the video.
Right.
Okay. And it'll explain it in great detail. You'll be able to search for whatever videos you want to see, whatever topics you want to see. The newest couple of videos will be at the top.
Yeah.
Plus the most popular ones.
Yeah.
So we keep track of what's being watched, and the most popular ones will migrate towards the top and the less popular ones will drop down towards the bottom.
I think that'll be a huge help, you know, not only because the doctors don't have enough time to go over it, but sometimes people don't remember everything from a visit and they want to go back and revisit with that visit.
That's right.
And so now they can just go online and see.
Well, not yet, but by the first of the year.
All right.
First
Soon.
Of the year. That's okay. been our goal, is to get it in by the first of the year, if at all possible. And the other thing, though, that every one of those videos, when I talk about something like testosterone in women or breast cancer or prostate cancer or whatever, the papers that I reference will be attached.
Nice.
So that you'll hear me say it, but then the peer-reviewed medical literature papers will be there so that if you want to download them, copy them, take them to your doctor,
right.
you can.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that you don't have to, he doesn't have to take my word for it. You don't have to go and say, well, Dr. Mixon said.
Right.
Say, no, Dr. Mixon said, and here are the peer-reviewed papers that he based his discussion on.
Right. Exactly.
Okay. And
very valuable.
Yeah, yeah. So that'll give you something to take to your regular doctors.
Right. Yeah. No, I think that's very important, Jerry. I do feel that our doctors, we're asking our doctors to do a lot every visit. You know, I was always felt that an hour would be enough, but I'm finding that sometimes an hour is not enough. Now, sometimes it is, but a lot of times, because there's so much information and people, you know, they'll ask questions, which I encourage because it stimulates our mind. Mm-hmm. But when they're asking questions and you already have this plan of so many other things that they need to know about, then you run into, A, they're not going to remember it all. You don't have the time to do it all. It's exhausting. But if you have other resources, well, they can say, you know what, let's talk about this today. And that just makes it easier. They have.
And you can say, go see Dr.
Yes.
Mixon's video on this subject or this procedure, and they can go do it.
Right, right. I mean, I'd still love to be able to offer unlimited physician time, but it's becoming difficult.
Well, it is. You know, when I started this clinic 26 years ago, I set up to have every patient visit be an hour long. And the assumption was, you know, since the average doctor was spending 4.5 to 5 minutes face to face with the patient, hour would be ample. And it was for a while. But we are getting more and more complex. But the fact is that unless we raise our prices significantly, we can't give any longer visits because we're kind of pretty much at break even now.
Yeah.
And so if the doctors are seeing fewer patients in a day, we start losing money. And if we start losing money, the doctors and everybody loses their jobs. And that's not really the way we want to go.
No.
We need job security for everybody. And we need the clinic to still be here for everybody.
Right.
And that means we got to pay the bills.
Mm-hmm.
But that means an hour per visit is about as long as we can go.
Yeah.
Unless we charge a lot more.
Yeah.
If we double our price, we can give you 2 hours a visit.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, that's...
Yeah.
Kind of the way the world works.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
anyway, but that's the new thing in our armamentarium. So I'm plugging away at that every day. I did 2 more videos yesterday, but then they have to go off for post-production. They have to take all my oohs and ahs and pauses and blank looks when I pull a Joe Biden and don't know who I am or where I am. And you know, and then when I talk about a graphic, I want the graphic to pop up on the screen.
Sure.
You know, and my picture will move up in a corner, and then you see the graphic I'm talking about, so you can actually see what I'm visiting.
Right.
And so on.
Right.
And so that all has to be done with the smart techie guys in post production. I do the video, I give them the graphics to say, clean up my mess, make it pretty, and, you know, put these graphics in the appropriate places. I don't know how to do that. I'm a doctor, not a techie guy.
Right.
So.
Right. No, very exciting things. I'm very happy that you're doing that. Thank you. So let's talk about prostate cancer for a bit, and then we might talk a little bit more later.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, I guess I'm going to start with, and this is totally off the top of my head. I was not prepared to do this. I just want you all to know that Samara just sandbagged me on the air. So.
Yeah, we'll just find out how smart you really are.
That's right. Okay. Well, Dr. Higgins, back in 1949,
That's right.
Actually, that is where we should start. Uh-huh. There was a doctor, I'm trying to remember his name. It started with an H.
Huggins.
Dr. Huggins. I was close. Dr. Higgins. Yes, Henry Higgins was on Sound of Music. There was no My Fair Lady.
Yeah.
That was Fair Lady. Professor Henry Higgins was My Fair Lady.
Oh, my God.
But Dr. Huggins yes. in 1949 published a paper. And in those days, the standards for publishing papers was pretty loose. If you saw a patient and it impressed you, you could write it up and put it in the New England Journal of Medicine. You know? There were no statistics, no controls. I mean, it was pretty loosey-goosey. And Dr. Huggins had treated one man with prostate cancer, and the man also had a very low testosterone. So he put the man on testosterone, and this man's prostate cancer grew very fast, and he died. And so based on that one patient, Dr. Huggins wrote a paper. Now, he wasn't much of a scientist because you should never draw general conclusions from one patient, but he was a great writer. He wrote one sentence that has lived in medical literature and the mind of every doctor trained since 1940, and it was this. Putting a man with prostate cancer on testosterone is like pouring gasoline on a fire.
Right, yeah.
And everybody just seized on that. And we all assumed the testosterone was why prostate cancers grew.
Mm.
Turns out, it's wrong.
Well, we forgot normal physiology.
That's right. Yeah. For some reason, they accepted that, totally forgetting the highest testosterone loads in human beings are in when men are between age 16 and 23. When do we see prostate cancer? Do we see a lot of prostate cancer with teenagers and early 20s?
No,
we never see prostate cancer in those people. No. It just doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. And yet those are the sky high testosterone loads. Mm-hmm. Those youngsters are running testosterones in the range of 1,000 to 1,200 nanograms per deciliter. By the time a guy is 50 or so, he's starting to see prostate cancers occur, 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s. But that's when the testosterone is on the floor.
Mm.
That's when instead of 1,200, you're getting 200 or 150. And the lower the testosterone goes, the higher the incidence of prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow we held on to this notion that it was that testosterone that's getting lower and lower and lower while the cancer is getting more and more common that was causing the problem.
Right.
And it just made no sense at all.
Mm-hmm.
So we now know that testosterone does not cause prostate cancer. It's just not true. On the other hand, medicine's always complex. There is a threshold effect. Most prostate cancers, the androgen-sensitive prostate cancers, need a little tiny bit of testosterone to grow. But it's a tiny amount. Okay. Once you pass that threshold, adding more testosterone does nothing. It doesn't make the cancer grow any faster. And the only way to get below that threshold is to castrate a man. So castrate levels will keep the cancer from growing, but anything above castrate levels is going to grow. And adding more testosterone doesn't add more growth. It's just a threshold. It's just one of these tiny little things you got to have. When you're looking at what causes prostate cancer, we have to look at a different hormone. And that we'll get to right after this break because I hear the music.
Okay. And do call us with your questions about either this subject or anything that's on your mind today, your health questions answered by Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. Call 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. 421-5757. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Back in just a few moments. And welcome back to more of Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Mixon, Dr. Umat, standing by to take your calls right now at 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. Interesting discussion just before the break about testosterone and prostate issues, and you were going to tell us about another mystery hormone.
Yeah, well, this isn't really much of a mystery, but it is another hormone. You know, young men with low prostate risk have very high testosterone levels, but they also have significant estrogen levels, because testosterone is only one hydroxyl group different from estrogen, and so a certain amount of our testosterone gets converted to estradiol. And we have estrogen receptors in our prostate. And there's two forms, the alpha and the beta receptor. But the alpha receptor, if it is not inhibited, it helps to immortalize the prostate cells. It changes them. They mutate, so they live longer and longer and longer. And a small percentage of them will actually live forever. They become cancer. Okay. So when we were young, we had a fair bit of estrogen. That's why those estrogen receptors are in the prostate. But we also had progesterone. And young men have almost as much progesterone in their system as young women. It's just that young women use their progesterone to cycle their periods and cause their uterus to slough, and that's why we see their progesterone. Young men, we don't really see any effect of our progesterone except in our skin. Progesterone gives us pretty skin. It makes your skin elastic and smooth. It helps to fill in fine wrinkles and creases. So people with robust progesterone levels, like young men, have attractive skin. They also sleep well. Progesterone is an anti-anxiety drug, and it decreases stress reactions and anxiety and lets young men sleep like babies. And so that progesterone has a lot of function in young men. And one of the functions is to keep that alpha estrogen receptor in the prostate from immortalizing your prostate cells. And so that progesterone is an anti-cancer, anti-growth, anti-prostate enlargement hormone. And as we age, our testosterone is dropping. As our testosterone drops, our estrogen tends to drop, except when we get fat. And as our testosterone drops, we make less muscle, which means we get tired easier, so we exercise less, so we get fatter. And the fat converts more of our testosterone into estrogen. And that triggers those estrogen receptors in the prostate to start being more and more active. But what we don't have is progesterone. And the low progesterone and the rising estrogen causes those alpha receptors in the prostate to start immortalizing our prostate cells. So the prostate gets bigger and bigger and bigger. It's also getting bigger because of inflammagene, which is inflammation that is system-wide at a low level. So low-level total body inflammation is going on. And that chronic inflammation, coupled with the low progesterone, alpha estrogen receptors causing those cells to try to live forever, will trigger a mutation in a certain number of cells, and that's where prostate cancer comes from, not the testosterone. Okay? So prostate cancer is, in a roundabout way, triggered by the low testosterone that makes your muscles weak, that makes you tired, that keeps you from exercising, that makes you fat, that produces the estrogen coupled with the low progesterone to give you prostate cancer. Not terribly simple, but that's kind of in rough terms the way the system works.
And then what we notice in data is that as men are getting older, the incidence of prostate cancer rises every decade of age. Mm-hmm. And that is related to low and falling testosterone levels
in
men.
Yes, right. And what we're now finding is, at one time, we were all terrified to give testosterone to any man that had ever had a prostate cancer.
Mm-hmm.
We now know that testosterone supplementation doesn't really make it grow any faster.
Mm-hmm.
If you're not castrated, you got enough testosterone for it to grow. We can give you drugs that will turn off all your testosterone. It's a chemical castration effectively that can make your prostate cancer shrink. Once we've treated the prostate cancer, can a man go back on testosterone? And that was the question for a long time. We were saying, well, yeah, we don't know. You know, should he, shouldn't he? We now know he should. Hmm. He should. When a man has had his prostate cancer cured, and if he does not have a rising PSA for 1 year, that's kind of our cutoff. If you have not had any evidence of a rising PSA for a year, then we'll go ahead and put you back on your testosterone. Mm. And the first thing we established back in the 1990s to 2000 range was that giving men back their prostate or back their testosterone after treatment of prostate cancer does not increase the rate of reoccurrence. A certain number of people are going to get a second prostate cancer. And it's just because we didn't really cure it all. We thought we had it cured. It wasn't quite cured. It comes back. Mm-hmm. About 5% of men that we think we've cured are going to have a reoccurrence. But the men who get prostate cancer or the men who get testosterone and the men who don't get testosterone afterwards get reoccurrence at the same rate. Mm-hmm. Doesn't matter. With or without testosterone, if it's going to come back, it's going to come back. Mm-hmm. But now as we're getting more and more men on testosterone after prostate cancer treatment, we're starting to see a trend. And there are some doctors like Dr. Morgenteller who are now convinced that we're actually seeing less prostate cancer reoccurrence in men that are getting their testosterone. If we kick those levels back up to a robust level where the man is really virile and strong again, it may well be that not only do we not increase the rate of reoccurrence, we may actually be decreasing the rate of reoccurrence. Mm. So men that have had a prostate cancer have been, we hope, cured and have been stable for at least a year can actually go back on testosterone now, and that might even lower their risk of a recurrent tumor.
Yeah, no, this is fascinating data. I know when I first had my patient here at this clinic, Jerry, who had prostate cancer in the remote past and was still not allowed testosterone, I asked him about it and he goes, well, you need to talk to my urologist. And so I did. And I was scared talking to the urologist. You know,
insecure, weren't you?
Well, yeah, of course.
And what did I tell you? Put on your big girl pants, channel your inner bitch, and do it.
I know, and I did. And the result was surprising. He said to me, well, you know, I was one of the first proponents of testosterone therapy after prostate cancer, and I breathed again. And then he said, I can't be held responsible for my staff, you know. And I said, okay, mm-hmm. I got it. I will take over.
Yes.
And I did, and the patient is still my patient. He's now in his 80s, such a wonderful gentleman. And guess what? No recurrence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing that came by later, and I heard Dr. Morgenteller, Abraham Morgenteller, met him actually. He's a very nice man. I've heard him many, many times now. But a couple of years ago at the AMMG, it was a fall presentation that you're going to, he was keynote speaker, and he got a standing ovation when he talked about his journey with testosterone mm-hmm. and what he has said and written and published. But the conclusion, he said, he was so cautiously optimistic that the research was tending towards what you just said, that patients who had had a prostate cancer, who had no contraindication now and were on testosterone therapy, were actually seeing less incidence of recurrence.
Yeah, which is pretty exciting.
Yes.
So it looks like testosterone is preventing breast cancer.
Yeah.
And testosterone reoccurrence,
right,
which is really important. So men and women should both be on their testosterone.
Yeah.
When you get back, we got one more break. I hear the music, but then I'm going to tell you about the first patient that had had prostate cancer that I put on testosterone back in the early 90s. And my hands were sweaty when I did it.
Okay, well,
you too.
We'll also get to that call with Robert in Seattle. Hang in there, Robert. We'll get to you in just a few moments. Call in your questions for the doctors, 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. This is Leading Edge Medicine, coming back in just a few moments.
After driving out the memory of the way things might have been, after I've forgotten all about us, the song.
And welcome back to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Call in your questions now for the doctors at 206-421-5757. And Dr. Mixon was going to tell us about the first person he put on testosterone and what happened.
Well, first person who had had prostate
cancer.
Okay.
Cancer, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd put a lot of people on testosterone just for reflux. For gastroesophageal reflux.
Yeah, we talked about that earlier.
Because by making their diaphragms bigger and thicker and stronger, they stopped refluxing. Testosterone improves every muscle tone in your body, including your heart and your diaphragm. But this was a young man, early 40s, who had actually gotten prostate cancer, and they had taken him off of everything and had put him on Lupron, which basically was a chemical castration. And he was totally miserable. He was depressed. He was tired all the time. He had no energy. He was gaining weight. His muscles were shrinking. He was getting less and less able to do his job. And he came into me in tears one day and said, "Doctor, if you don't put me back on testosterone, I'm going to kill myself this week."
Wow.
And so, wow. You know, and this was like 1990, 91. I didn't have the clinics here yet. I was just doing the early research. And I actually put this guy on testosterone to keep him from killing himself.
Wow.
Because he literally would rather die than to continue living with the problems of being a castrate. So, but I was a little sweaty because I was concerned,
No kidding.
Something was going to happen. The medical board was going to come in and do nasty things to my license,
right.
And, all this sort of stuff.
Oh, sure.
But it turns out that I was 20 years ahead of the times. And now, 30 years later, we're getting more and more data to say it was the right thing to do. So... yeah, that's just the way the world
Lupron,
works.
Lupron, isn't that one of those medicines they're putting children on with transgender stuff?
Yes, yeah. They want to shut down all their natural hormone production and just give them the other gender's hormone balance. But these kids develop osteoporosis and depression, and they're already depressed.
Mm.
You know, the incidence of autism among transgender youth is 40%. And depressive disorders are rampant, anxiety disorders, personality disorders. These children with transgender have a very, very high load of psychiatric issues.
These medicines don't help, it doesn't sound
no,
like. They think they're doing it.
No. And, castrating them and then taking them to surgery and cutting off body parts is not the cure for mental illness. It just is not.
Whole nother can of worms. Okay. Well, we do have a couple of people on the line. We'll get to those calls and maybe yours as well. If you're listening today with your questions for Dr. Mixon or Dr. Umat, the number to call is 206-421-5757. Let's go to Robert in Seattle for our first call this morning. Hi, Robert. What's your question for the doctors?
Hello, Robert. How can we help?
The question is about hair. Dr. Umat may be good here.
Uh-huh.
But I had COVID, and my hair got worse. It went from looking like a forest in the spring to a forest in the wintertime.
Mm.
And so I tried minoxidil.
Okay.
Minoxidil, surprisingly, worked like a charm. My hair just popped, filled out really full. I'm kind of curious what that's going to mean for my hair situation in general, because I was afraid that I have become so micronized or whatever that there was no help. But the minoxidil definitely helped. So I quit the minoxidil, and my hair went back to looking like a forest in the wintertime.
Yeah.
Very wispy.
Okay, yeah, and that's what
so
we'd expect.
I had a problem. I had a problem with my stomach also. For the last 40 years, I've drank 36 ounces of coffee a day.
Wow.
Continually loose stools. So I noticed when I didn't drink so much coffee, the stools were better. So I quit drinking coffee except for one cup on Saturdays. And
wow,
what I did is I replaced
change.
It.
That's
quite a change.
And I replaced it with, instead of coffee, I made a concoction of a juice of two lemons, matcha green tea, 20 to 40 grams of grass-fed bovine collagen, Ceylon cinnamon, turmeric every morning and drank that. My stomach is fine with that.
Yes.
But one thing I have noticed is that my hair is starting to pop again, even without minoxidil, which I think I'm going to go back on anyway because I love the look of full hair.
Sure.
But I don't know whether the hair is popping because of that drink that I'm doing or because my stomach situation is much better. What do you think that says for my future hair journey? And would PRP give me more hair fullness than minoxidil does?
Probably. Yeah, there's several things to consider here. Age-related hair loss, when you've got global loss as opposed to the male pattern baldness, because male pattern hair loss is a function of dehydroepiandrosterone. DHT. Dehydrotestosterone. Yeah, dihydrotestosterone, which the hair follicles can take testosterone or DHEA and convert it to dehydrotestosterone, DHT.
Yeah.
And that micronizes the hair follicle. But, as we get older, we have less testosterone and less DHEA, and so that hair is getting lost for more reasons than that.
Right.
And it's inflammation. As our estradiol levels are dropping, we get more and more inflammation. And the inflammation is part of what we have that's causing our hair to go bad along with the rest of our skin. That concoction you're mixing up has, as you were going through your list, I heard multiple potent anti-inflammatories in there. Great polyphenols in the matcha tea, for instance. And you're probably decreasing the inflammation in your scalp. The minoxidil will counteract the production of the DHT, and that'll make your hair thicker. The microneedling will also increase the growth factors in the hair. And there's some other things that we can use, such as the PRP or the Wharton's jelly, basically exosomes, to promote more hair growth. So minoxidil is going to get better. You have to stay on it long term. It's not a one and done. You don't fix it and then stop. As you've discovered, when you stop, you lose the benefit. But the other things can also increase hair growth significantly.
Mm-hmm.
And you can probably get even better if Dr. Umat does her magic for you.
Especially in patients that have had COVID-related, so where
a
cause that has precipitated the hair loss for them, I do find they get better results.
Yeah.
Okay. Does that help, Robert?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. You're welcome.
And actually, I need to come back.
All right.
Being my 70s, late 70s now, 76, my hair is micronized a lot.
Mm.
It's much smaller shaft thickness than it used to be. At one time, you treated me a few years ago, and it got considerably better.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
then I got lazy and haven't been back for a touch-up, and it's thinning out again. So I need to come back. But I'd like to come back and try the Wharton's jelly, too.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we'll definitely do that for you this time. And there's a specialized technique that we use, the Wharton's jelly. So I'll share that with you when you come back. So that's
Sounds good.
To us.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's move on to our next call, although we will need to take a break here in just a moment. But let's maybe start the call with Bob in Tacoma. What is your question for the doctors, Bob?
Hi. Good morning. Clearing my throat. I'm a 70-year-old guy, and I just started with a new PCP, and we had our meet and greet last week. And he, one of the things he asked me was how many times I was getting up at night to use the bathroom. I said 2 times. He thought, well, you know, maybe you should be taking Flomax. And I'm thinking, I don't think so. I don't take any medications, zero. And I'm very active. I run every day, and I go to the gym every day. I swim 3 days a week, a mile each time, and I'm fit. And so I was resistant, but I thought, you know, whatever. So I took it. I took it for 2 nights, and it was very dramatic, very dramatic. No pain, you know, no urinating during the night. But it, also in 2 days, I already had side effects, and I said, to heck with this. I'm not taking this stuff anymore. And what I found was looking, doing my own D&D, saw palmetto came up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
What's your feelings about saw palmetto?
What were your side effects?
Well,
tell you what, I hear the
dribbling.
Drums. We got to take a break. So sit tight and tell us about your side effects when you get back, and then we'll tell you about saw palmetto.
Okay, call in your questions now for the doctors at 206-421-5757. Back with more of Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat in just a few moments.
Now the race is on, and here comes pride in the backstretch. Heartache going to the inside. My tears are holding back there. I'm trying not to fall. My heart's out of the running. Two love scratch for another saint. The race is on, and it looks like heartache. And the winner loses all.
And welcome back to more Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat. They're taking your calls at 206-421-5757. We just got into a question from Bob in Tacoma, and Dr. Mixon was going to respond.
Yeah, Bob, you took the Flomax. You said in 2 days you had adverse effects. What happened bad with the Flomax in 2 days?
Well, the first thing I noticed was I couldn't feel an ejaculation.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Nothing. No sensation whatsoever. I'm like, what? And then another side effect, I was in my car and I was coming home and I had to urinate. You know, I'm holding it. I've never had a problem with leakage in my whole life, except when I had a kidney stone and they put a stent up in me. They put it in wrong. And that was 12 years ago. But that's besides the point. So I'm coming into the house and I feel like I couldn't hold it. I didn't, you know, do it in my past, mm-hmm. but I leaked. And that has never, ever, ever happened. I mean, it's the only thing I could think of. It had to be the Flomax.
Okay. Well, it's a smooth muscle relaxer, and it is smooth muscle in those valves that control your bladder. So, yeah, it allows you to urinate more efficiently by opening relaxing the muscles. And so the channel for urination gets wider, but you're right. It also then makes it harder to hold it if you have detusor instability. All right. So then you had looked up some things and you said you were interested in saw palmetto.
Right. You know, I decided then and there that I'm not taking this stuff anymore. You know, I'm hypersensitive to pharmaceuticals anyway. I just don't take them for that reason.
Okay. Well, but remember, from Dr. Mixon's standpoint, okay, I don't draw a big distinction between over-the-counter and prescription. If it alters the way your body functions, it alters the way your body functions. And the fact that a bunch of bureaucrats in Washington, D.C. decided that you have to have a doctor to write this one, but you can buy this one without it, is immaterial. That's a legality. That's a bureaucratic bull. The real thing is, what does the compound do? You know, how does your body react to it? And that's the important thing.
I mean, remember, a lot of the medications and prescription drugs do come from natural sources.
Yes, they do.
They just kind of find a formula that they can then prescribe.
Statins
like
all
statins
come from
statins and red yeast rice.
Absolutely true. Yeah, levostatin, it was the active ingredient, and they just made it stronger and more concentrated and patented it and made a few billion dollars off it. Yes. Saw palmetto contains things that will, over time, shrink your prostate and will relax the detestor muscles and allow you to pee more freely. So it's not a bad choice. It doesn't work instantly. It is dose-related. The higher the dose you take, the better it tends to work. But eventually, you can get leakage problems with saw palmetto, too. Okay, so
Will the prostate shrink? I don't know if I told you this. My PSA is 2.7.
Okay, 2.7 is very nice at your age. I'm delighted to hear that one. That tells me you do not have much metabolic activity in your prostate. So the good news is you're still sexually active. You're still having ejaculations, which many men your age are having a lot of trouble with. 50% of men by age 50 have some degree of erectile dysfunction. So how old did you say you were? 80?
70.
70, okay. Yeah, by 70, it's nearly 70% of men have some problems. So the fact that you're still functioning is good. I like that. Suggestion you might consider, as opposed to saw palmetto, is tadalafil. Now, it is a prescription drug, but...
I believe I saw that as an option, too. How is that spelled?
T-A-D-A...
F-I-L, Tadalafil. L-A.
L-A-F-I-L, Tadalafil.
Yeah.
It's a prescription drug, but I think that we ought to start putting it in the water supply, actually, and get it off prescription list. Tadalafil's got a lot of interesting components to it. For one thing, it helps erections be more robust. It was originally designed, in fact, as an ED drug. So a small dose of tadalafil every day, 2.5 to 5 milligrams a day, especially if you're sensitive, you might want to start at 2.5. They make a 2.5, 5, 10, and 20. So, but most men use 5 milligrams a day. It improves erections. It makes you urinate better. It gives you more complete emptying of your bladder. It lowers the risk of prostate cancer. It cuts the risk of prostate cancer by 50%. So, why not protect yourself against prostate cancer? It helps prevent all of the other solid tumors that I'm aware of from spreading as fast. So if you had a lung cancer or a colon cancer, it might actually slow down the spread and end up saving your life. It improves the blood flow in your brain and helps your cognition. It's all the way around. It's a wonderful drug for men and women. Mm. And so, I use it. My wife is on it. We kind of spray it in our clinic. We kind of spray it around like jelly beans.
Given all of the benefits, a lot of our patients are on it. In fact, vast majority of our men are on it, and many of their wives take it as well.
Yeah.
The cardiovascular benefits are tremendous. What was the cardiovascular history with this class of drugs?
Well, it lowers the risk of heart attacks by 30%. So, it is better than statins at decreasing the risk of a heart attack. So, you better brain, better heart, better skin, better cancer protection, better urine flow, and better sex. You see why I would like it in the water supply.
Why is it such a why are they keeping this under wraps, I guess?
Well, it's not. I mean, the medical literature is out there. It's just that once there's a tendency, human beings mistake label for function. Once you label something, everybody thinks the label describes its whole function. And this drug was originally designed as an erectile disorder drug. So everybody thinks about, that's for ED. Well, yeah, but also for blood flow to your brain, heart attacks, prostate cancer, So the drug doesn't know anything about what a committee decided to approve it for sales. federal approval is a marketing approval. It says the drug company can publicly market it for this purpose. But that doesn't mean it's all it does. It means this is all the feds have said the manufacturer is allowed to market it for. But doctors should use it for all the things it does, not for what it can be marketed for. We don't care about the company, whether they make a big profit or a little profit. We want the patient to benefit.
But it's different from Viagra and Cialis, though, right?
No, it is Cialis.
It's Cialis.
Oh, it is Cialis.
Yeah.
It's the generic Cialis.
Oh, it is?
The difference is Cialis is very expensive. Tadalafil is dirt cheap.
Okay.
Because it's a generic. All right. We have more music. It means we got to take another break.
Okay.
Did we get your question answered?
Yes, sir. Thank you.
All right. Take care, sir.
Bob.
Bye-bye.
Coming back from the break, but you can call in your questions now, 206-421-5757, 206-421-5757. Your calls when we return after the top of the hour. You're listening to Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Dr. Mixon and Dr. Umat will be back in just a few moments with your questions. Again, 206-421-5757.